Accession number 32971, Reel 5.
Being in Northern Ireland for so long. Then what happened?
This is summer 42. And it came on orders then, they started forming all these airborne companies, you know. And it came on airborne companies for the RASC and infantry and all this stuff. So it came on orders that they wanted volunteers for these airborne companies. And, you know, we'd get extra pay and that. And anyone putting their names, you know, want interest, put their names forward. So myself and quite a few of us in the company, which our CO didn't like, put our names in. And we had to go to Belfast, to the RAF at Belfast, and have certain examinations, you know, physical and all that business, educational, physical. And, that's right, it was a glider pilot regiment. Glider pilot regiment, that was what we volunteered for. And I went to Belfast, and passed these tests at Belfast. I've got the certificate still in there in somewhere, mostly. Physically fit for the glider pilot regiment. So, right. Oh, another thing we did it for was for the extra pay, you see. And, you got probably a shilling a day more than what you was getting, which was a lot of money. And anyway, we're waiting to get our reporting orders. They all had to report at somewhere on Salisbury Plain, it was, West Down, Salisbury. But a couple of days before we got our reporting order, our movement orders, my little son was 2.5 years old. He's still got scars to this day. We're living in this house with, as I said, down at the bottom of the hill, Fairford House. And this man, McNulty's wife, she's a bit frail and a bit, you know, a bit... And old-fashioned house. And, you know, you had the back, what we used to call the back kitchen, and the sink and all like that, and then the window in front of where the sink was. And then down below outside was the grate, where the once postal county went to the grate. Well, she'd make a pot full of tea at breakfast time, and they got an old-fashioned coal stove there. And she'd leave the teapot on what we call the hob, just stewing there till the next time she's going to make some more tea. That's how she was, you know, forgot things. And then she'd lift the kitchen window up, reach through and pour the tea leaves and tea down into the drain, see. Well, this particular morning, my little son, who was only about 2.5, he was playing in the garden, and he went to this grate to wee out of the kitchen window. While I was there, she lifted the kitchen window up, got the teapot that was full of scalding old tea, poured it. Down it went, all on his shoulders, down here, terrible. Of course, my wife, she heard him screaming and she rushed out, his gut was writhing in pain, terribly scalded. They sent for me up at the billets and top of the hill in the castle. I run down with the medical, I got my medical orderly, who eventually got killed in France anyway, Peter Young. He run down with me and took his first aid box with him, you know. Poor Anthony there, he was terrible, burned all down his arms and down here. He did what he could for him. And didn't have much stuff in those days, you know, not like them now. But olive oil under that one, that was the worst thing you could do. Anyway, they took him to Lisbon Hospital, Lisbon. That was about between Belfast and Hillsborough, Lisbon is. Took him to Lisbon Hospital. And he's there for 2 or 3 weeks. And in those days, you weren't allowed to visit a young child in hospital because they say it upset them. And won't let you go. So we just have to go and visit him and stand at the end of the corridor and peep through the door or the window I've seen that, but he stood in this cot, all bandaged up, looking bewildered, you know, and it was heartbreaking. But, and, got him home, and the burn healed pretty well, and then my wife went back to Switzerland. But I'm over on Mr. This all happened just at the time when I waited for the movement to transfer the Gladiator Regiment, so obviously I cancelled it. My wife went back to England, and all, I got leave about that time, and I went back with him. And I say, luckily his burn healed up, but he's 70 now, that son, and he's still got scars down his arms here. And he's going to Arnhem with me in September. But it was terrible, you know. Oh, and I remember when he was in Lisbon Hospital, wife and I were sleeping in his bedroom in Fairford House, and he used to have a little cot in there, and we used to go to bed at night. We were at this cot, and it was empty. You know, this upsets me more than some of the things I saw at Dunkirk, you know. Yes, I can see now. We both used to look over at the cot, you know, he's not there. Anyway, we got him home, got him back. Got back to England, and I went with the wife, and I had 10 days leave, and she stayed at home, of course.
So you said that you finished it in Hillsborough in January 1943.
Yeah.
So where did you go then?
Well, I said prior to January 43, in the September or something like that, I went back on leave and took my wife home. You know?
Yes.
And then I came back to Hillsborough, and they sent me to the Northern Ireland Battle School in the mountains of Mourne, at a place called Castle Wellen. There was only two battle schools, that one, and one in England, somewhere up in the northeast. I forget the name of the place now. Oh, Barnard Castle.
Oh, yeah.
Barnard Castle, that's up in near Durham, isn't that where?
My dad comes from Barnard Castle.
Well, that had a battle school, and Northern Ireland had one. And our battle school, it was sometimes worse than being in battle. The training was all with live ammunition and shocking, and it was winter, of course, in the mountains of Mourne, just imagine it. And near this village called Castle Welland, which was down on the coast. And so I was at that battle school, I don't know what, for about a month. And then I came back to Hillsborough, and in January 43 we got orders to move back to England, to the UK. England.
Where were you stationed then?
Well, now then we took all our vehicles and convoys out and drove down to Larne, and we sailed from Larne to Stranraer in Scotland. And from there, where were we going? Oh, from there, we went down to Norfolk, all around the Sandringham estate, Norfolk. But on the way from Belfast to Norfolk, the Sandringham estate, we stopped at North Hallerton, you know, in North Yorkshire, for a couple of nights, refuelling and messing about. And while we're at North Hallerton, I I got orders, my platoon, a platoon officer did, that we'd to go on detachment again on our own. Where did we go to? So what happened? They just started forming the Guards Armoured Brigade. Guards Armoured Division.
30 Corps.
That's right. Well, there were 30, finished up in 30 Corps, yeah. And they were taking part in this first big exercise, which was a rehearsal of the invasion. Exercise Spartan. That was a code name, Spartan, yes, Exercise Spartan. And while we were at North Allen that night, the CO sent for me and the platoon officer with my letter comes and said, look, tomorrow morning, get off at crack of dawn, and let her go down to, where was it? Oh, I forget now, but somewhere down around the Dover area, or around there. And report to this place, and I think it was report to. And we was taking part in this exercise Spartan with the Guards Armoured Division. And we were on that exercise for 3 weeks, all round the south coast, Dover, Fulton. And one night I was taking my convoy through Dover, Fulton. And the Germans' guns shelled over from Calais, from the Paris-Calais area. Mm. Yeah. At first I thought it was all part of that exercise, somebody was using live ammunition. Anyway, we were on this exercise for 3 weeks. And then what happened? By that time, the rest of the company was around the Sandringham estate in various villages, Castle Rising, Snettisham, Dursingham, all those villages around there. That was a platoon in each village. And I went back then with my platoon and the officer and joined the main company. And we stayed there for a few weeks. And then we moved down to Hull in Yorkshire, only 35 miles from Doncaster, which is very handy. We moved down, the company moved down to Hull. And, of course, this is around about April 43 then. April 43. And then, I hadn't been in Hull many days before they took my platoon, sent my platoon on detachment again. I was always copying for the detachment jobs to a place called Selby, S-E-L-B-Y, which is between between Hull and Doncaster. Nearest to Doncaster again, which is suited me. And we went on detachment to Selby and. I remember my platoon was billeted at Selby above Burton's the Tailors. In Burton's the Tailors in those days, they always had a place in the main street, a big shop, and all the area over the shops, they were turned into billiard halls. You know, you used to go and pay sixpence an hour and play billiards. Every Burton's Tailors did that, whether Doncaster or whatever. All above the shop, they had a billiard hall. Anyway, we got cleared the billiard hall out and we got billeted above Burton's the Tailors, my platoon in this great big area. And then, of course, while at Selby, it was very nice, I used to sneak away quite often at weekends to Doncaster. Mm. It was only some 3/4 an hour on the train, straight down the line.
Why were you in Selby then?
Well, I was in Selby, yeah.
But why did they want your platoon there particularly?
Why did they want us there? Mm. I don't know. Part of the general training of, I forget really what was there for me. You got moved about, you know. Mm-hmm. We'll be supporting something or other.
And then what happened?
Well, right, and then... also, whilst I was at Selby, I got sent on a swimming instructor's course. A survival instructor's course. To Leeds. And I was billeted... Oh, and this course was taking place at the Teachers Training College at Ockley Road in Leeds. Strangely enough, my wife's sister, previous to that, had attended that same Teachers Training College. Mm. And we were billeted in these houses and went into the college and used their swimming pool on this survival course. We just had to swim across the pool with full equipment on and rifle and all like that. And also, this was, when was this, 43, wasn't it? 43. I'm getting mixed up with the years, you see, 43, 44, 43. Oh. Also, we used to have to go out to Round A Park in Leeds. I don't know if you've ever heard of it or not. I know it well, but a big park at Leeds called Round A Park. There's a great big lake in the middle of this park. We used to have to go out to that and swim across this lake with all this equipment on, you know. And
so you were quite aware that it was going to be an invasion quite soon.
Oh, yeah. And then, of course, when I got back to the unit, I had to teach the lads at Hull what I'd learned. And we used to go to Hull swimming baths. And I used to take the lads down there with the equipment and rifle and all like that. And so, right, you know, get in and swim across the swimming pool there, you know. Because that one used to sink like a stone. This was training, survival training, in case you got, you know, when you're going over the channel to the, normally you got into the water. And then, after that, see, I was 43, I got sent to Aldershot for 6 weeks to the depot, the Royal Army Service Corps depot, on a company sergeant major's course. And then I came back to the unit, and of course, as I said previously, our unit was that efficient, and they were all regular soldiers, and all the senior NCOs, and the quartermaster, and the sergeant major, they'd been there a long time, and you had to wait for somebody snuffing it before you.
Dead man's shoes.
Anyway, I'd passed all right the company sergeant's course, so therefore I was a CSM, I was deputy CSM, you know. And I didn't get made eventually to CSM until our present CSM left us in Germany. And I stepped into his shoes. And that was quite late on. Not long before the war finished, I got made, Benji got made CSM, when he got sent off somewhere.
So what did your duties as deputy CSM?
Well, I just take over when the CSM was on leave or gone off on something.
How many men were you in charge of then? When you were deputy, how many men were then?
The whole company.
The whole company.
Oh yes, probably. Let me see. 36 or 30, probably about 300, roughly. You know, I don't. Yes, roughly 300. Yeah, probably more. There's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 platoons. Roughly 60 men a platoon, you could say. So about 300, yeah. And of course, you had the. You got your, then the, you've got your all your officers above you, of course. You've got your company commander, you know, and the adjutant and platoon officers, you know.
But
you were the sergeant major in charge of discipline. You know.
Yeah. Did you find that difficult to do, or?
No, I didn't, because I mean, I've been in the army quite a time then, and I've seen things, and I've been on this course, of course, CSM's course. But no, it wasn't difficult.
Yeah. So what happened after that?
After, oh, right, I was at CSM's course at home. And then it got to 1944. And was doing all invasion training at Hull, by the way, yeah. We're training on what was Exercise Eagle. This is a big one for the invasion. The Americans were doing the same down this end, around Slapton Sand and all like that, all parts of Exercise Eagle. But we were training all around the East Yorkshire coast, around Flamborough and Filey, because that area was similar to this area at Slapton where the Yanks were training, a bit of a replica of the Normandy area where we were going to invade, see. So we were training early spring, 44, all around there. And I always remember one night we were on top of the cliffs at Flamborough Head. And it was early spring, cold at night, of course. And yeah, it'll be February, I suppose, February, March. And all along Flamborough Head on the cliffs, there's these Martello Towers, you know what I mean? Mm. There used to be some round here, Martello Towers, built in the Napoleonic Wars. Mm. Well, of course, there was cattle in these fields, and at night time, the cattle used to sleep in the Martello Towers. Well, of course, we outed the cattle, and we went and slept in them. Cow milk and also, but it was warm. And the annoying part about it to me was, oh, that's right, the Guards Armoured Division was holding the area around Filey and Scarborough. And we was around the area around Flamborough and Hull and that part of the coast. Well, my sister lived at Filey. She married a man at Filey, and she was eventually mayoress of Filey anyway. And she lived at Filey, and that's only about 10 miles from Flamborough where we were. And of course, we're filthy and starving. What's a good meal and a good wash? I thought, if I get my motor back and go to Filey, I could have a lovely bath and a good meal. And, but I couldn't, because if I had done, I'd have got captured by the enemy, which was the enemy, you see. So I couldn't. And anyway, then that exercise part, and then that finished. And round about that time, I'm not sure of all the dates now, you know, round about that time after Spartan finished, we got news that Winston Churchill and Montgomery, and I think Eisenhower as well, they were coming to Beverley Racecourse. That's in East Yorkshire, quite round that area, you know, Beverley, Birdsley, Beverley, East Yorkshire, to review a lot of the troops who was down for Market Garden. No, not Market Garden.
D-Day.
Overload.
Yeah.
So off we went to Beverley Racecourse one day, all polished up and paraded and stood there for ages and ages, and along come Winston Montgomery. Stood on a box and give us a talk and all like that, you know. That was that. And then in April 44, we moved down from Hull down to the south of England, the invasion area, you know, where they're all assembling. We went down to through Tunbridge Wells to a place called Wadhurst, W-A-D-H-U-R-S-T, Wadhurst, in Kent, of course. And that was our area, and we built in these big houses around Wadhurst. Lovely place it was. And then, where are we now? Oh,
you had just gone down to the invasion area, yes.
Around Wadhurst. And we're training around there, and while I'm there, that's wrong. Before that, I was sent on a course to Southend-on-Sea, to what was known as the Kersal. It was like a big amusement centre. The army had taken it over as a waterproofing school. You see, all the vehicles that went on the invasion had to be waterproofed for driving through the water, you see.
They had to extend the exhaust up, didn't they?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Put all plastic round the sparking plugs and carburetor, and then you had a flexible pipe on the exhaust going up like a chimney and things like that. Anyway, they formed this waterproofing school at the Kersal at Southend, and they sent me there for 2 weeks on a waterproofing course. I came back, and then I was in charge of waterproofing all our vehicles. There's a lot of them. And we had them around this place in Kent, Wadhurst, and we took over a farmer's big barn. See it now. And the vehicles, my platoons, and say, oh, we'll do a platoon this week, you know. They'd come along, bring their vehicles in. And I'd, we'd got all the waterproofing materials, all the plastic and one thing or another. And I'd instruct and supervise NCOs and drivers how to do their own vehicles. And I'd keep going around seeing that they've done that, you see.
Did it affect their performance?
So then what happened? You all this plastic, what's called pressure plastic, you put that all around the sparking plug, all around the distributor, and the electrical parts, you know, water effect with the carburetor. And on the carburetor, for instance, you'd stick like a piece of tape under the plastic with a piece hanging out. And when it was all done, you pull that tape. So there's a bit left for a breather for the carburetor. And same with the distributor. See? You have to leave breathers so you could, as you say, it didn't affect the performance. Well, it did affect the performance, but you could still run like that. And then the last thing before you got on the invasion ships was to seal them up. And and we had this flexible pipe up, running up from the exhaust pipes up in the air, stop water getting in that way. And then also when you got on the invasion ships, you put a ground sheet over the radiator so that when you hit the water, the surge didn't do too much damage, you know, it stopped the surge of water. And, anyway, we did that, and then eventually time came for us to go, and we had to run down to Portsmouth. Portsmouth, right.
What was the feeling on in the company? Were they anxious to go and
worry about it? Yes, we really were anxious to go, because, you know, most of us had been at Dunkirk, and we thought we're getting our own back now, you know. And it was a different feeling. You see, at Dunkirk, we were being chased. And whenever I used to see a big dog chasing a little dog down the street, and it was yelping, it used to remind me of Dunkirk. That's how we were being chased. But on this, we knew we were going to do the chasing. Different feeling. So, no, we're really... I don't think a lot of us thought about the danger then, you know, just...
All psyched up for it.
Yeah. Not until we got there. Anyway, and then came the time, and we didn't go over on D-Day. I mean, there was enough room for us all. And then again, they couldn't do with all the vehicles there for D-Day the first few days, because the beachhead wasn't big enough, you see.
No.
So when we went, I don't know. June the 6th, D-Day. Probably a couple of weeks after D-Day we went there. Wasn't it? June the... No, it was the 6th. No, I don't think it was as long as that. I think it was about a week after D-Day we went, about June the 10th or something like that. By that time, the Germans had Hitler had concentrated all his armour down in the Pas-de-Calais area. He thought he was going to come there, you see. Mm. And we fooled him. And he wouldn't move it. And I mean, Rommel and them was imploring him to move his arm. But no, it's just a fake. That, you know, it's that Normandy, it's only a fake, and they'll be coming to Pas-de-Calais area. Anyway, about a week later, he realised that it weren't a fake, no, it was a real thing, and he moved his arm up. And what I'm saying, when we got there, a few days after,